Today on Vox Talks, a new research policy network on competition policy. Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. The CEPR's Research Policy Networks, or RPNs, were created to build a long-term community of researchers around a topic of high policy relevance. And the CEPR's newest RPN launched last week. It's focused on competition policy. But what's it going to discuss and how will it influence policymakers? I caught up with Greg Crawford of the University of Zurich, who's the chair of the RPN, and Christina Caffara of Charles River Associates, who's the vice chair, to find out what they have planned for us. So first I asked them, why is it important to do something like this now?
Well, issues of competition and competition policy are more prominent now in the public debate than any time in, I'd say, the last 50 years. Now, of course, everyone knows about concerns about giant digital platforms, but it's not only that. There's academic research to support that margins and concentration are rising, that there's concerns about mergers across the economy of future potential competitors, and issues of algorithmic collusion in these big data environments. And so this is the time to bring together academics and policymakers to really try to dig into this question.
I come at it from a slightly different perspective. I'm not an academic. I've been all my life a three-sided platform between academics, business, and enforcers. I think what we are witnessing now is a major shift in the political economy for the reasons that Greg has mentioned. We are realizing that in addition to just big changes in what drives the phenomena we are experiencing, there is also a significant under-enforcement, which is recognized as being a concern. And there is a need for work that speaks to that, because the kind of underpinning that enforcement has had until now is based on something which is by now quite debunked, views of Chicago economies 40 years ago. And there is a need to replace that kind of presumption with new work. There is, however, not enough motivation for academic economists to get involved in the policy relevant discussion. And so this idea is to try and nudge academic economists to do policy relevant research and at the same time enforcers to motivate academics to do policy relevant research.
Greg, despite what Christina says, there is probably more work than ever going on in university departments on this topic. So why is it important to bring it together at the CEPR? I mean, at the CEPR, we're very pleased that you've done it, but why?
So I dispute your premise. Some academics are working on this topic, but I think there's a real gap, as an academic, that I have seen between the problems really facing enforcers and the work that the academics are working on. So I think CEPR is the perfect platform, the perfect helper, complement to our goals, in part for two reasons. One is the P in CEPR is for policy, right? And this RPN, this Research and Policy Network on competition policy, is all about influencing policy. The second thing is that CEPR is well regarded by academics. And I think that doing this with the CEPR imprint attached to it is more likely to get academic attention. And that's really one of our goals, is we want more attention for academics to the problems that enforcers are facing on a daily basis. And so we think CEPR can help with that.
And can I put an accent on the last point, Tim, if I may? Because what we're doing is not an academic endeavor in and of itself. What we're trying to push is involvement by academics in answering the questions. What I said before is that there is a presumption, a premise that underlies enforcement, which is obsolete in many cases. We are harking back to views of efficiency, that the biggest firm is the most efficient and therefore it's bigger, that are debunked. We need to replace that kind of view with something more relevant. And if you don't, you're going to have the consultants doing economic advocacy all the time, relying on stuff that is no longer relevant. So we need the academics to get going and think about the kind of things they say matter, because we've seen concentration in industry after industry after industry, agriculture, pharmaceutical, metals. And this is something that needs studying in addition to the digital platform. sense. So there is a lot of work to do.
You clearly have a global focus, but a lot of the focus for these kind of debates is on Europe or maybe Europe and the US. Are we taking in the whole of the world in this RPN?
There is certainly an intention to involve more than just Europe. We have academics who are based in the US who are very engaged in the policy debate, but we're also reaching out to chief economists in agencies in jurisdictions outside Europe and the US, in South Africa and Australia. I mean, we want to have as much as possible this kind of contribution on the part of people who are at the coal face of enforcement, speaking to academics and saying, this is what I'm faced with. Give me something to work with. And it isn't certainly just Europe and the US. It is broader.
And these are ambitious goals, Greg. What are you actually going to be doing in the RPN?
Good question. We want to engage with enforcers around the world, and we want to be a leading platform for the critical discussion of competition policy making and policy design. So how are we going to do that? Well, as we've suggested, we're going to build a network. We're going to build a network of policy-oriented academics and enforcers, especially economists at ideally chief economists, but economists at the leading enforcement agencies around the world that are really tackling these questions. Okay, so we have a network. What are we going to do with this network? We envision two types of events. So first, we think of one as bottom up. We take a topic, sort of a hot topic in contemporary antitrust policy debate, self-preferencing, mergers of potential competitors, killer acquisitions, this kind of thing. And we bring together, often there is some academic work on any of these topics at the moment, and we bring together the academics that are working on that. And often these academic papers, one will say X and the other will say Y. And for enforcers, it's better if there's an agreed consensus of when do you get X and when do you get Y. And so we want to bring these guys together and build a consensus. What do we agree on? What don't we agree on? And what are the levers that give you one path instead of another? And ideally, for these kinds of events, we would produce a CEPR policy brief. So not an academic paper, but really a working document that would be targeting both policy-oriented academics, but especially enforcers and policymakers, which can bring together a consensus of what do we learn? What do we know? What don't we know? Where do we agree? Where don't we agree? So that's the first type of event. But we also envision a top-down kind of event. And our first event, which is happening next week, is going to be this kind of top-down event, where we bring leading thinkers in antitrust policy around the world into a room, onto a table, to share their insights with the academics, right? So these are heads of competition agencies, these are politicians, these are just sort of thought leaders in this space, and we want to bring them together to say, this is what we're facing, this is what you should be working on.
We have talked about this sort of stuff before, haven't we, Christina? I remember we did a Vox talk about the Google Fitbit merger, and you were highly critical at the time about the way that competition policy was being applied in that case, which might lead some people to think that this RPN is just a big exercise in bashing big tech. Is that how it's going to work out?
It's emphatically not the case. I think it's fair to say that the academics who have signed up for this network, and there's over 30 now already, are pro-enforcement, all of them. And we certainly identify with that crowd. But there is no sentiment of big tech bashing in any way. In fact, I think that much of the work that needs to be done is to really understand the economics of competition on the platform, for example. There is incipient academic work. Incipient is perhaps understating it, but there is a flurry of recent work that has looked at competition in e-commerce, competition on an app store type of thing. These things are all at the level of working papers. There's very little yet published. And the point is that we want to pursue this kind of dialogue, dialectic exchange between people who are saying it's X or it's Y, as Greg say, and importantly, disseminate it in a way that enforcers can orientate themselves between, for example, results that are not often easy to make compatible. So there is no sentiment about tech bashing. There's certainly pro-enforcement, but we need to do more work to establish the foundations.
But Christina, this sort of work stands or falls on whether you affect real world outcomes, doesn't it? Because debate and dissemination, that's easier now than it ever has been. But this is very policy relevant. How are we going to change real world outcomes?
Well, in two ways. One is indeed involving economists and chief economists at the agencies and forces in this discussion. This isn't an abstract academic endeavor, although, of course, academics are the foundations for all of this. We need that exchange. But we also need academics to understand that writing a paper that is essentially speaking to their peers, but doesn't get taken up, understood by the enforcers community, is perfectly useless for the world at large. It is good for perhaps their career, but no one cares. No one cares outside of five people, them and their mom. And the point is really that there is very little awareness in academic circles about how you actually need to take that next step. You write a working paper, okay, and the working paper will say something like the set of circumstances in which this proposition is true is not empty. And the rest of the world looks at you and says, what does that mean? What does it mean the set of circumstances isn't empty? Tell me when this is true and when this is not true. Tell me when it is more likely to be true and when it is less likely to be true. An enforcer reads that paper, throws it in the bin. So we need to have that kind of translation. And academics need to understand that to write that the set isn't empty is irrelevant to the world.
And let me pick up on this as well. I mean, so I don't disagree with anything Christina said as an academic, but academics respond to the incentives of succeeding as an academic, which is publishing in the top journals and which isn't influencing the policy debate as a general rule. Every academic would rather have some nice paper with an economic insight that also has a policy contribution, but papers that are written exclusively for their policy contribution, in my opinion, don't get published as highly as they should. And of course, then it's very hard to motivate academics to work on things that will take time away from other things that will better advance their careers. Academics, you know, they work a little bit in their ivory towers, right? They're doing their stuff. And what we want to do is say, look, there are these hugely important questions out there. There's this battle going on down at the base of the tower, and we need that you help what goes on down there. And so that's the goal, is to say, come on, let's do it.
Tim, let me just say, if you don't fill that vacuum is going to be filled by the consultants. And what consultants do, being one of them, is take something selectively, a sentence out of context, a model out of context, in the main, because they're paid to do so. And so that is not advancing the cause of enforcement. It is a travesty of what should actually happen. So I think this is so important because the field is in fact occupied by economic advocacy based on essentially economic interest of defendants. And that isn't what we should be seeing. We should be seeing more worthwhile content being ultimately used and applied and experimented with. We are still using concepts like as efficient competitor test, which are old, which are premised on a deeply political perspective that the incumbent, the dominant firm is efficient. And it is an incumbent because it is efficient. Just go away, everyone else. So we cannot live with that.
Greg, if I'm an academic and I want to get out of my ivory tower and join in your RPN, what should I be doing?
Well, here at the beginning, what we've started is we've launched a network of about 30 to 35 academics and 7 to 8 competition or enforcers. And we decided initially, as is the model of the CEPR RPNs, to keep it small. And the reason is we want to move the academic agenda a little bit. And to do that, you need to start with a relatively small group on any given topic, maybe 15 to 20 people on any given topic within the domain of the RPN, and start from there. But most of our events will be open to everybody. So if there's a researcher out there that's interested in these topics and is working along the lines in parallel with the RPN, interested in influencing policy, then come to our events, speak, ask questions, reach out, we'll include you, and there will be turnover in the membership of the RPN. And as we go through our events, we'll get to know who else is out there that's working in this space, and there's always opportunities then to invite further people down the road.
You can find out all about the Competition Policy RPN by visiting cepr.online/competition. And of course, if you want to listen to my previous Vox Talk with Greg and Christina, it was called Should Google Be Allowed to Acquire Fitbit? And that was published in October 2020. Next week, I'll be talking to Greg and Christina about the RPN's first conference, which is coming up on the 17th of June. But until then, don't forget to subscribe to Vox Talks. And remember, there are 12 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.